and welcome back to the Hotel News Now Podcast Network. Today, we are going to dive into all things supply chain with expert Alan Benjamin, who is founder of the hotel industry furniture, fixtures, and equipment procurement firm Benjamin West. Thank you so much, Alan, for joining me today. I'm excited to have you on.
Absolutely. Good morning.
Good morning. And last we spoke, it's been a while, but I feel like the general theme was some issues were easing, but there's obviously a lot that's still persisting. And a lot has changed since we last spoke. I believe it was 2022, which has been way too long. But we've got lots to catch up on and more developments within the supply chain environment. So we will dive into all of that. But first, I want to start off with, how would you rate the environment now in terms of if whether you feel like the impacts of COVID-19 on supply chain have eased, or, you know, if you feel like the hurdles specific to the pandemic have really fizzled out?
So, I mean, going to the 40,000 foot level first, I'd say, you know, it's the question, are we better overall than we were, let's say, the depths of COVID, Q3, Q4 of 2020? Yes, absolutely. Across the board in every way, shape, and form, whether that's product in the U.S., product outside the U.S., shipping, container costs, you name it, we're better than we were at the depths of COVID. However, are we back to, you know, pre-COVID, 2018, 2019? No, not at all. I think as an industry, we've done a really good job of kind of adjusting to a new normal, but some of our vendors in terms of the FF&E area, they had what I would call the Peloton moment, where no one had one. Everyone bought one, and then people realized, like, oh, it's not something you need to buy every 6 months or every year. It's more of a 5 or 10 year situation. So, I mean, there were times during COVID where items such as outdoor furniture were 50 weeks, 1 year, 50. And then the vendors in that area tended to overproduce. And then it went to, hey, everything's in stock and it's on closeout. And then, you know, to a greater or lesser degree, that happened with a lot of different FF&E and commodity areas. But then things tend to revert to the mean and normalize. And I'd say overall, that has happened in terms of the product supply. In terms of the shipping, though, we're better than we were. We're not at $25,000 and $28,000 containers. They used to be $2,000 before that, but there are lots of issues.
Absolutely. And one issue right now that we can definitely speak about is what's going on, you know, for the Red Sea crisis. Can you explain to our listeners how that's really affecting hotel projects and maybe any advice on how to navigate this?
Yeah, at first, a lot of our clients didn't realize that it would affect them, thinking that they don't buy a lot of product out of, you know, the Middle East per se, or even that much. I mean, there's some that comes out of Europe and that area, but obviously a lot still comes from Vietnam, China, Indonesia, Asia, in terms of imported product. But, you know, overall, and we haven't really heard the phrase of worrying about container shortages, but it is causing a container shortage again. Rephrase, we haven't really heard the phrase container shortages since the peak of COVID, but the Red Sea crisis is causing that again. About 90% of the containers on those routes are taking extra time to get through. Sometimes they're not, you know, using the Suez Canal in the Red Sea. They're going all the way down the bottom of the continent. So, you know, it's caused delays way outside of our world of hospitality, FF&E. Auto industries had a lot of delays, as have other industries. So it is an issue. It's continuing to be an issue. And, you know, nobody knows exactly when that's going to be resolved. There are some major shippers that will just not ship that route for obvious reasons.
So, skipping ahead just a little bit to talk more about the difficulty of securing containers. Can you describe maybe how long it's taking and the cost, if it's costing even more just to reserve a container?
Yeah, the biggest issue is, you know, and we just finished the last ISHC CapEx study, and The estimate is that our industry spends about $15 billion a year on CapEx. That excludes the cost of new build items. But even with that, and just staying in the world of home furnishings, which is what it's called on the residential retail side outside of the commercial contract side, we're a tiny part of the overall demand for containers. I mean, you look at Costco and Walmart and other huge companies that are using up all that demand. So right now, you know, I'd say that container costs are going up, not back to the levels of horrible peak COVID. It is a basic supply and demand issue, and it's going to take a while. I mean, we might be, it's kind of like interest rates. Everyone thought, oh, there's going to be seven cuts, then five cuts, then three cuts. And now people are saying maybe two or no cuts. It's a very similar thing, you know, where things get to a normalized rate of supply and demand, and they rushed in with a bunch of extra containers, but it's not enough to meet the current demands that's going on. As we see, the overall economy is really strong. And a lot of those things that are keeping inflation from going down are goods and services shipped in a container.
Right. And I'm sure a lot of this still also comes down to relationships as well with vendors or factories. Can you explain maybe how that's shifted a little bit for your firm? Just as a little example, I was speaking with Trinity Investments SVP of Development, who had said, really, in this environment, it kind of comes down to the game of you almost have to convince some manufacturers that you're kind of the number one priority. And, you know, this also does help with getting better costs in some cases. So curious as to how you are navigating this as well.
Yes, we're doing a lot of work for that gentleman that you just mentioned at Trinity.
Oh, great. And he's awesome.
Yeah, and yes, he is awesome. And it's an interesting situation. I often tell our clients, you know, our job is not to sell them on using our firm. Our job is to, once we have that project, is to, as Craig was saying at Trinity, enroll the vendors and explain to the vendor why, you know, they need to do this project at this price, at this lead time, at this quality level. And I'm trying to answer this one without being too salesy, but one of the, you know, and Trinity is a huge company doing large 1,000+ room projects. Right. So the situation could be worse for a more, you know, smaller company doing two or three limited service or select service hotels a year. But one of the benefits of using a large procurement firm is you're getting the leverage of all those vendors and our vendor relationship. So when the vendors look to get that order from us, it's not just a one-time order. I mean, a firm such as ourselves is purchasing $1.5 million a day. Wow. So whether that's for 50 clients or 100 clients or three clients that day, it's still getting that aggregation of spend. And it is a key thing. All the key vendors are busy now, and I think they're going to be getting a lot busier later. There's kind of that wave of deferred CapEx. I mean, there's all the things, the projects that were due to be done in 21 or 22 that obviously got deferred due to COVID.
Right.
The roughly 8% that of revenue that's required to do the projects. We used to say that half of it was in the 4% CapEx reserve and the other half had to come from somewhere, you know, operations or an owner capital infusion. And now we're in a situation where for many properties, for the first time in our lifetime, that 4% CapEx reserve that was always in the lender, you know, lockbox, you can't touch it. Right. That was used for survival, for lease payments, mortgage payments, whatever they were. So technically speaking, we're missing both halves of the 8% right now. So once the capital infusion part of CapEx is figured out, it will even further turbocharge the demand. And there's a reason why, whether it's Trinity or a lot of other large owners and small owners and medium-sized owners, it's not even the 80-20 rule. It's more like the 90-10 rule of there could be 100 different vendors in a certain area. There's three or five that really tend to outperform. And we all want to use those ones. You know, they have the best combination of attributes. So it is a situation now where you do want to get to the head of the line. And it's not just about price. It's about, we need this vendor to make this exact item. And it's more competitive than ever because of the proliferation of brands that you really want to have the best FF&E in your hotel.
and not only assets from pandemic time that are needing that renovation. I was hearing some as well from Great Recession time, now reaching that 14 year. So it's just a lot all compounding at once. And I'm curious if you've made any new relationships and added, you know, firms that you guys or vendors that you guys work with, or has it kind of been your usual stable of folks that you do business with?
No, we have new vendors all the time. We literally yep. have more than 4,000 vendors in wow. RPM, our proprietary system. But okay. that 80-20, 90-10 rule does still tend to be there where, you know, I'd say in each area, whether that's case goods, seating, wall covering, lighting, artwork, et cetera, there tend to be the larger, better capitalized vendors that can handle the 1,000-plus room orders at a time.
Okay.
Not taking anything away from a lot of the other vendors that are phenomenal to use for suites, public space, you know, very unique custom bespoke projects where we literally do portfolios of limited service, large big box hotels like we're in right now here in yep. Atlanta. Yep. And then some of the highest end, completely, you know, unbranded, totally custom, high-end boutique hotel. So it's similar to a large global auto manufacturer. If you looked at the yeah. VW group, Volkswagen mm-hmm. has Volkswagen, Bugatti, Porsche, Bentley, Audi, and they're making products at all cycles. The right. supply chain for FF&E is very similar, where there's different products in different niches, and there's different vendors that are the best for each of those types of projects.
Right. So in terms of receiving goods, we mentioned a little bit, but wait times on that. So better than COVID-19 era, but not better than before, correct?
Yeah. And it's very specific in terms of lead times.
Okay.
And the other thing is, some people tend to think that, oh, everything is coming from China, or everything's coming from Vietnam,
right.
or everything's coming from North America. Mm-hmm. And the truth is, none of that is the reality. We are mm-hmm. truly in a global supply chain. And we do have some clients, and we respect their wishes. We're their fiduciary agent. We follow their direction. You know, they mm-hmm. might say, hey, we want to buy everything in the USA. And we can do that to a certain extent. Mm-hmm. But there are some items that the industry thinks are made in the USA. And I think it's better to say they're assembled in the USA.
Yes.
So a lot of the component parts can still come from outside the US, and you still have similar supply chain issues. It might not mm-hmm. be quite as direct because it's not the finished item. You're waiting to get to that warehouse at the right. hotel at that item at that exact date, but it's still mm-hmm. the key component parts that are delaying something. So it really is project specific. Interestingly, the higher end the hotel, the greater tendency, like for case goods, to not be made in the USA. The, you know, the more labor intensive, certain materials, mm-hmm. certain finishes, the greater tendency you're going to have that item made outside the USA. But the good thing is the overall, I'd say there's a tailwind to more domestic and North American manufacturing, especially with Mexico is growing in strength.
Mm-hmm.
In Asia, you know, it is still really, at the end of the day, especially China specifically, great at making stuff, despite yeah. trade issues and tariffs mm-hmm. and other things there. China right now, though, is not experiencing inflation. In fact, in some areas, they might be experiencing deflation in costs.
Yep. So speaking of that, how would you describe the state of product inflation costs right now? We can speak to whether, you know, you want to keep it regionally or however you want
yeah,
to tackle that.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. So going back to China, let's say they were having a tremendous amount of wage inflation 2-3 years ago, not anymore.
Yeah.
I just had looked this up last week for another meeting. So I know Vietnam's inflation rate is about 3.5%, not
okay.
that statistically different than the current inflation rate mm-hmm. in the U.S. Overall, I would say as an industry, it's a benefit for owners. The FF&E world has not experienced the same rate of inflation as, let's say, groceries and the overall U.S. inflation rate. So
okay.
if an owner had a project budgeted in 2019,
mm-hmm.
pre-COVID, and for whatever reason, they didn't pull the trigger, and now they're going to do that renovation nominally 5 years later, I'd probably add, if you put everything in a bucket, about 15% to their FF&E hard costs. I'm excluding freight tax, demo warehouse, install, all the soft costs.
Okay.
And if you look at, you know, 5 years compounded, the U.S. inflation rate's been more than that. Mm-hmm. So I think one of the key things is that unlike airplanes, you're buying from Boeing or Airbus, there's two major vendors. In the FF&E world, there are multiple vendors for every mm-hmm. single item. And it's up to the owner, designer, a great purchasing agent, project manager, that entire CapEx team. It still keeps that market very, very competitive.
When looking at ports, I know we in the past talked about ones in the U.S., like in Savannah. Can we talk about if those are freeing up now and there's not so much of a, you know, congestion in those areas and what that's really looking like?
Yeah, it's better. I remember during the peak, again, peak COVID time, let's say Q3, yeah. Q4 of 2020, you know, there were 100 plus ships off the port of Long Beach and Catalina Island, and people were complaining about everything going there. That has gotten a lot better. Yep. People are using East Coast ports a little bit more. But one of the challenges now is that due to delays from, and we didn't talk about Panama Canal yet, so I want to bring that up, but between Panama Canal and Red Sea, ships are not arriving when they first thought they were arriving. So you do have some bit, somewhat of a delay and backup situation. Mm-hmm. And especially in people wanting to use the East Coast port and using the Panama Canal instead of going, you know, Long Beach and trucking things 3,000 miles across the country.
Right.
No war there, but they're having a drought situation. Mm. And that's causing two things. One, less ships can go through. Mm-hmm. And the ships that are going through have to have a considerably less amount of weight or containers on them, about 40% less, because there's not enough, you know, the draw of a ship, the drought situation mm-hmm. is not allowing the ships to draw as much water and going through that they would run aground. So that is causing issues also. So we have, you know, the drought issue. We have the war issue going on mm-hmm. with Red Sea, and then just overall strong demand with our overall economy, and more things are coming here. So it's also a little bit of an imbalance where more containers are coming in than need to go out.
Right. And then when you think about having to store them, then how is warehouse storage looking? Because I know last we talked, that was also an issue.
Yeah. So warehouses, not talking about storing containers, but storing the FF&E
the goods,
itself. Yep. Yeah. For the warehouse. Yep. So the biggest issues there are, I would say, twofold. One is certain cities are having some capacity issues. San Jose, L.A., are pretty much at capacity. DC, Miami are kind of on a watch list. Fort Lauderdale also, just because there's not enough capacity overall. And remember that a lot of these warehouses that we use in the hospitality industry are also used for residential moving and storage. Mm. Obviously, the office market, in terms of that taking up capacity in warehouse, is much softer now. So that does help balance things out a little bit.
Right.
The other big issue going on at warehouses, though, and this is probably counter to what I said about, you know, FF&E costs are under the overall inflation rate. Uh-huh. Warehouse labor costs are not. So warehouse labor costs have seen extreme increases. And there's a slide that I used a few weeks ago in a presentation to a client showing, I think it was In-N-Out Burger in L.A., somewhere in California, and they were starting at $22 to $24 an hour. So you have warehouses competing with fast food, mm-hmm. and it's, you know, backbreaking hot work, and you don't get free French fries with it. So it's a difficult way for them to compete. So warehouse labor, it's hard to get, and what you're getting has high turnover and much higher costs. So warehouse costs right now are probably, relatively speaking to product costs, are higher and more affected from inflation than the product itself is.
Is that still pretty in line from last year, or do you feel that's gotten quote unquote worse in terms of that labor?
Let's say it hasn't gotten any better. I think that it's, you know, it might not be increasing at an increasing rate, but it's still, those costs are still going up and those issues are still there.
Okay, so let's, to sum it all up, let's get your thoughts on what you feel the trajectory for recovery in the overall entire supply chain environment will look like in the next year, if you could predict it.
Sure. Well, it's funny. I was with some folks last week at another conference, and they said, I heard you on this seminar in the, you know, depths of COVID, and, you know, maybe Q1 of 21, so right out of that, you said 2024 is going to be record demand for CapEx.
Oh.
And they were saying, but you're probably a year off because no one predicted what was going on with interest rates. And, you know, obviously a lot less transactions, and the transaction market, you know, welcomes, all the brands welcome the new owner with the new owner PIP. So there's been a little bit less change of ownership PIPs than predicted, but I would say that probably next year will be the all-time record demand for CapEx. And in terms of the overall supply chain, it's more unpredictable than I've seen in the last 40 plus years. The one good thing is that there are multiple countries that are able to produce very similar items. We're imploring all of our owners, when they have time, to do a proper model room. We always have two vendors per every item in the model rooms, you know, vendor A and vendor B. But instead of just looking at the different design details or construction details, it's also important now where say, hey, have two countries of origin in the model room, because nobody is smart enough to know, let's say, 12 to 16 weeks after you place the model room POs and you have the model room review and you're ready to do production POs, is another country going to have an issue? We don't know. Hopefully not, God forbid, but what if COVID comes back big time? And one of the lessons we had from managing supply chains in Asia during COVID is a lot of people just said Asia, and you couldn't do that. China and Vietnam had completely different COVID responses. There were times that China was 90% open and Vietnam was 90% closed. And literally 60 days later, that switched. So it's a situation where it's very fluid. It's very dynamic. I would recommend to owners to use people that are in this conversation every single day, whether it's what port to use. Is there a pending port strike? You know, is a union on the East Coast, is their contract expiring September of 24, which it is? You know, little things like that to kind of say, hey, is this going to affect my model room, or is this going to affect my 300 room or 500 room or 1,000 room or whatever it is, production or portfolio? And to really use people whose ear to the ground, as I said, literally in this every day. They might have 10 or 15 or 20 orders going with a certain vendor. And what's the best factory from that vendor to use? It's getting more complicated by the day. It's not getting any easier.
So many nuances. And yeah, I mean, like you said, they're deploying their capital, so they got to, you know, make sure that they're going with people that really just have a pulse on things and all the intricate parts of it. So great advice to owners.
Yeah. One other key thing is, you know, even if we get to this 2% target that the Fed has for inflation, keep in mind that prices tend to go up much faster than they go down. They go up quickly, and it's very, very sticky for prices to go down. They might not go up as fast, or they might stop going up, but I don't think on really any FF&E category short of some major technological innovation that allows them to produce things 20 or 30% less cost than they were producing before, I don't think we're going to see any deflation in FF&E costs or logistics costs anytime soon. You know, even if you look at the fuel for ocean liners, is up about 10% since the start of this year. It's up 50% compared to 21. Diesel fuel, which is all the domestic trunking here in the U.S., is up 30% higher than pre-COVID in 2019. Yeah. So again, and obviously those costs vary daily to weekly, you know, fuel costs and stuff like that. But I don't see us going back to what the costs were pre-COVID.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to come back to you in 25 to see if your prediction now for record demand for CapEx was correct.
I think that one would be good. I'll bet you lunch at next year's Hunter Conference.
Let's do it.
You got it.
Alan, I learned so much. This was very, very helpful, and I'm excited for our listeners to ponder through this as well. But any last words from you that you would like to say?
Probably the best advice overall is to get your team in place as early as you can. We talked a lot about money and costs and inflation, but we didn't talk about time. And I think that's the number one thing, is the more time your design team, your procurement team, and frankly, the vendors have, we have so many more solutions that we could go to. There's more rabbits we can pull out of the hat. The shorter the time, the more compressed schedule that we all have to work in. Yes, we'll still get it done, but something could be compromised. It's often cost, frankly. Mm-hmm. So none of these CapEx projects should come as a surprise. I mean, you shouldn't be waking up on Tuesday going, oh, I have to renovate my 300 room hotel. I got to start tomorrow. Plan things out in advance, have time to do model rooms, have time to have multiple vendors from multiple countries, and really vet things out so that, you know, it's a huge, huge, huge disruption to the hotel. No matter what you do, there's displacement of revenue. Right. There's lots of issues so make sure you have time, hire the best people, don't buy consultants by the pound, get the best people mm-hmm. you can and really implement a great strategy.
I'm Devon Reed.
I'm Omari Head.
And I'm Chris Henry.
We're the hosts of the Next Gen in Lodging podcast on the Hotel News Now podcast network. It's a monthly show in which we interview a new generation of hoteliers to get their insights into a variety of disciplines and topics, from finance to food and beverage and hotel operations. Listen to us on Spotify, Google, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This episode of the Hotel News Now podcast network was recorded at the Hunter Hotel Investment Conference by Dana Miller on March 20th, 2024, and was edited by Rachel Dobb.